Greetings, everyone, and welcome to The Law Hour, an editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about The Law Hour, an editorial review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an editorial review, brings you important information about law news and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the nation's rising young rural poor right after this. 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small, and you shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, you know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed that scriptural principle when they put, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts," into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10. But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. Now, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks to the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coin. Now, in the intervening 70 years, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until now we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that I teach in my Mosaic Law School. We conduct that school here at the law school twice a year. To learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call right now to order yours. The number's 417-273-4967. And my Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. So if you can't come to school, we'll bring the school to you. If you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, for this last hour this week, I said I would take up the business principles from the scripture that'll tell you how to be successful financially. There are agencies of government, not to mention think tanks and universities and professors writing books about poverty in America. And indeed, they write books about poverty in Africa and poverty in Asia. They're always trying to figure out what causes poverty. Why do we see Ted Turners on the one hand and abject poverty in the delta of the Mississippi River on the other? What's the difference between a Ted Turner and a poor black in the South who can't make ends meet? Why is it that some blacks make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less, and down the road there's some other black, and he can't even make a living, and he's on welfare or food stamps? Is it color of your skin? Well, I pointed out to you, a Vietnamese comes over here, he's a boat person, him and his wife, they haven't got anything, zero. They don't even speak the language, and they come here in about 10 or 12 years. They're living in a nice subdivision in Dallas, Texas, own their own business, and what's the difference? What makes it? Well, there are certain principles in business that make the difference, and I'm going to share those business principles with you. I've collected these principles. I've been watching people for many, many years. I've written books. I teach school, and I made this challenge. I said, if you've got average intelligence, and if we can get you to zero COD, when you can't make money until you get out of debt, people who are in debt are at minus. We got to get up to zero. If we can get up to zero, you can earn, make, create, save, and put $100,000 worth of gold in a hole in the ground in 36 months, starting at zero. 36 months is what it takes. Some people can do it in less, some people take longer, but I'm just telling you there are certain business principles you got to follow, and I take these principles right out of the Bible. Now listen to this. The beginning of all business is the offer. That's number one. When we go to make a business deal, we've got to have an offer. Then you've got to have an acceptance, because a contract is what a business deal is all about. And a contract has four elements. It's an offer with an acceptance, over time, with consideration. So the beginning of all business is the offer. And all business is transacted by unequals. That is, if you and I are equal, we can't do business. Think about it. I go into Walmart and they've got 30 battery chargers on the shelf. I don't have any. We're unequal. I need to buy a battery charger, so I buy one. I've got a battery charger at home. I walk into Walmart. They've got 30 battery chargers on the wall. I don't need one. I've already got one at home. We're equal. And if you're equal, you can't do business. Number three, if the offer is good, take it. Number four, never just refuse an offer. Always make a counter offer if you don't like the offer that you've received. Without making a counter offer, you offend the other business partner. Number five, all business is transacted with an acceptance, not wishful thinking. It's a knowing, willing, intelligent acceptance of the offer. All contracts are oral. The paper that contains the terms and conditions is the highest and best evidence of the contract, but all contracts are oral. Number six, never accept a deal that you cannot perform your end of. Number seven, the best business is repeat business. Number eight, you never lost any money on any deal you didn't make. But you've lost a lot of money on a lot of deals that you wish you hadn't made. Number nine, never charge interest. Number 10, never pay interest. Usury and interest violate the statutes in the scripture that prohibit the charging of interest, called usury. And when you violate that law, you pay a penalty each and every time. Number 11, do unto your customer that which you'd have your customer do unto you. It's an extrapolation from do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Number 12, when you're the seller, always deliver more than you agreed to. And when you're the buyer, always pay more than you agreed to. How do you pay more? When you pay on time, you're paying more than you agreed to. When you pay early, you have paid more than you agreed to. All right, number 14. Every transaction must benefit all of the parties every time. Always leave some crumbs that fall off the table. Number 15. Never risk more than you can afford to lose. When you risk more than you can afford to lose, it's a gamble. The rule of thumb that I've always followed, and the men that I've talked to, when you've got a stake, I don't care whether your stake is $8,000, $80,000, or $800,000, you never risk more than 25% of your stake on any one business deal. That means that some business deals are too big for you to handle. When you need $8,000 to handle a deal or to invest in a deal, and all you've got is $8,000, the deal is too big for you. Pull in your horns. Number 16, never position yourself in a transaction so that you can be taken advantage of. You never allow yourself to be put into the position where somebody else has power over you. Number 17, never trust anyone. Business is not predicated upon trust. Business is predicated upon performance. Number 18, thou shalt not steal. It's the basis of all property. without thou shalt not steal, you can't have property. Americans have stopped practicing property and property rights. We now practice from each according to his ability and to each according to his need under the first plank to the Communist Manifesto. This is a wild new concept. Number 19. In a multitude of counsel, there is safety. Corporations and business entities have a board of directors in a multitude of counsel. We sit down and we talk about it. What do you think of this deal? Some people are for it, some people are opposed to it. Sometimes you get outvoted. But in a multitude of counsel, you're more likely to make a good deal than you are if you do it alone without any other input. Number 20. You must be in full control of your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. These are the five motivators of human nature. And if you can't control your five motivators, you may rest assured that somebody who knows how will be jerking your strings and controlling you. Number 21, find a need and fill it. I learned that from Henry Kaiser. He put it on his cement trucks. Find a need and fill it. It's just that simple. You know, if you're across the street from McDonald's, there's no need for another hamburger or hot dog stand. Number 22, there is no such thing as unemployment. And anybody who's unemployed, collecting unemployment benefits, is saying to the world, all of the work has been done. Number 23, a man's word is his bond. Do not fail to do that which you have agreed to. And when you fail to do that which you have agreed to, you've lost a customer, you've lost the business deal, and the guy won't do business with you again. Number 24, a deal in your hand is worth two in your head. Comes from the old adage that says a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Many times people are waiting for a better deal to come along, and while they're waiting for better deals, they miss all the neat deals that are right there in front of them. Number 25, unreasonable expectations lead to poverty. Unreasonable expectations. Buying lottery tickets is an unreasonable expectation. You ever seen anybody buy lottery tickets and make money at it? You hear about them. I never met one, but I've met a lot of people, made a lot of money. I've never talked to any successful man, any successful businessman that ever bought a lottery ticket. Number 26, if you can't hang on to it, you don't need to make it. The real trick in business is hanging on to what you make and not letting somebody else take it away from you. Number 27, if you never do business with a thief, you'll never be stolen from. If you never do business with government, you'll never be stolen from. Number 28, if you always eat the best first, then you'll always have the best. It's what we call in business cherry picking. You don't have to take every deal that comes by. Number 29, there is no substitute for diligence and hard work. Diligence and hard work. Number 30, in business, you get what you pay for. When you buy cheap, you get cheap. 31, a satisfied customer is the best value for your advertising dollar. I'd rather have one satisfied customer than $100,000 worth of free advertising on radio or TV. Number 32. A business without a plan is like a ship without a rudder. Every business has to have a plan. You have to know where you're going. You have to have an idea of what it is that you want to succeed. What do you want to accomplish? Number 33. Credit business is bad business. It's not illegal. You can do credit business. But always remember this. When you give your merchandise or your time and you don't get paid for it, it's worse than if you hadn't made the sale at all. Because now, you've taken your time, lost your merchandise, and you didn't get paid. If you hadn't made the deal, you'd still have the merchandise or your time. And the single most important thing in business is getting paid. Number 34. The purpose for business is getting paid. Americans not only don't get paid, they get a discharge inequity in commercial paper, which loses value every year. That's 7% right now. Hang on, we'll be right back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, here's an interesting statement. It says, "Then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men." You'll find that quotation in Acts 5, verse 29, and you know, that's a revolutionary concept. But it's impossible to put into practice unless you yourself know the law. Can you imagine yourself actually telling a policeman or a judge that the law of God supersedes the law of the state? Think about that. There are actually three laws that support Peter's position in Acts 5, verse 29. The First Amendment to our federal constitution is number one. Public Law 97-280 is number two. And the Supreme Court's decision in Seeger versus United States is the third. Now, do you know the scriptural law to cite in support of your position, let's say on the census, public school, social security, vaccinations, or the many other laws of the scripture that conflict with the laws of the state? Do you know how to look them up, research them out, code plead the law to use the scripture to defend yourself against state and federal intrusion into your constitutionally protected rights? And if you don't know the law of the scripture, and you don't know the law of the state, you're not going to be in any position to challenge either one, are you? Now, if you're tired of being a biblical illiterate with the police and public officials kicking sand in your face, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? Remember, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call right now. The number's 417-273-4967. My Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for your free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org. Why don't you do it right now before you forget, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're closing out the week talking about this thing called poverty, rural poverty. Think tanks, professors, colleges, universities, government agents and agencies are all trying to figure out what the cause of poverty is. Poverty is the violation of the 15 laws that govern economics, or govern success in business, from the Bible. You know, one of them's land, Sabbaths, and Jubilees. When you're dealing with agriculture, if you won't practice those two laws, you won't be very successful at agriculture. And take a look at farming and agriculture in America today, and what happened to all the farmers that have been evicted from the land over the last 70 years. Take a look at America. 100 years ago, we used to practice most of the Ten Commandments and the laws of God, and kept the Bible in our schools and taught our children out of the Bible. Taught them morality. Taught them citizenship from the scripture. Today we've banned the Bible from our public schools, and we teach paganism, heathenism, amoral behavior, sex education in public school. I'm not talking about sex education from the perspective of the Bible, thou shalt not commit adultery. I'm talking about sex education in public school that says 14 and 15-year-olds should be sexually promiscuous and experimenting. It's the best way to learn about sex. Now, when we talk about business, the thing that causes poverty is the violation of the economic laws that govern success and poverty. And if you violate those laws, there's a penalty to pay. Poverty is the penalty that we pay for the violation of the law. Number 35. If you need a license to do your business is a criminal activity. So every one of you that's engaged in business, and if you have a license or need a license to do it, a license by definition is permission to do something that's otherwise illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. A license is a criminal activity. Number 36, there's nothing wrong with making a good profit. So next time you hear one of these socialists and communists decrying these outrageous profits, now listen, there's nothing wrong with making a good profit. Number 37, a business, like a ship, has room for only one captain. business doesn't run by committee any more than an army does. Number 38, in business, there is no substitute for experience. People that go into business without any experience don't know what they're doing, do they? Number 39, good business is based on performance, not trust. All wealth comes out of the ground. Number 40, if you think about it, all wealth comes out of the ground, and it requires hard work to get it out. Number 41, working for wages is the antithesis of business. Wage earners are bond servants. All we've done is changed your name from bond servant to employee. There's no money in employment. The money is in business, and the business is private business. Number 42, never go surety, and you'll never pay another man's debt. There are six statutes in the book of Proverbs that prohibit you from going into surety. That's signing your name, guaranteeing somebody else's debt. Number 43, a good product sells itself over and over. If your product is good, you don't need advertising. It'll sell itself. Number 44, a lazy businessman is a poor businessman. 45, incentive and productivity go together. Incentive and productivity go together. Number 46, when you're looking for a product to sell, select one that is small and valuable. It's a whole lot easier to sell diamonds than it is to sell truckloads of wheat. Number 47, in business, doing the impossible is routine. Doing the impossible. We never say, gosh, I can't do that. We say, this is impossible and it takes a little longer. Number 48, success in business is determined by accomplishment, not intent. So many times people say, gosh, I just can't do that. Well, if you can't do it, you can't get paid for it, can you? Number 49, everything costs more than your original estimate. It's kind of like Murphy's Law. If it can go wrong, it will go wrong. Everything costs more than your original estimate. Number 50, the most competitive business has the lowest prices, best products, and the best service. Look at Walmart. 51, every dollar cut from overhead is a dollar of profit that goes straight to the bottom line. Number 52, a business financed with borrowed money is most likely to fail. 90% of all businesses, new businesses started here in the United States, fail within the first year or two. Almost all these people finance their businesses with borrowed money. Number 53, you practice the 2% principle. You buy it for a dollar and you sell it for two. It's called the Keystone Markup. In the trade, we call it the 2% principle. Number 54, build your barn first, then build your house from the profit from your barn. That principle, number 54, is the principle that I outlined to you here a program or two back. The Vietnamese guy lived in the back of the donut shop for several years. He built his barn first. He collected the money that he needed for his steak. And the old adage that says it takes money to borrow money. It takes money to make money. Well, when you borrow money, the guy that's lending the money is the guy that's making it, and you're working for him. Build your barn first. Then you build your house from the profit that you make from your barn. Number 55, overhead is a luxury that profit cannot afford. Number 56, all contracts are oral. The document is the highest and best evidence of the oral agreement. Number 57, a man will only trade that which he esteems least. Number 58, that which a man esteems least is the thing that he speaks most highly of. Number 59, the profit is made when you buy, not when you sell. You collect the profit when you sell. Number 60. A business is like a crap table. A business is not the place to store your wealth. Number 61. Businesses, unlike diamonds, are not forever. All businesses cease to exist, either by bankruptcy, merger, or a going out of business sale. 62. A fool gives his capital to another to lose. 63. All business, by its very nature, is a selfish enterprise. 64. Good business, like a good story, comes from the heart, not company policy. And 65. If you can't sell it, nobody needs it. So don't make something that you can't sell. 66. Don't sell something that you don't have. I think that's a given in today's marketplace. These corporations are selling what they don't have. That's called fraud. Number 67. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. 68. A profitable employee will never be unemployed. Number 69. He who has the gold makes the rules. 70. Whenever we lose money, it's always on a deal that we wish we hadn't made. Number 71. To ensure that your capital is invested wisely, invest your capital with yourself. Number 72. To ensure the loss of your capital, invest it with anyone. 73. Opportunity is like rain. It's everywhere. And like running water, it needs to be channeled for best results. 74. Opportunity only knocks once is a false statement and is a proverb of fools. Number 75. Everybody is a consumer, but only a few consumers are producers. 76. Do business with a producer, and prosperity will follow. If you do business with a consumer, poverty will be your reward. Number 77. A rich man's needs are few, and he has much money with which to pay. 78. A poor man's needs are many and endless, and he has no means with which to satisfy them. 79. Business is for the rich man. Charity is for the poor. 80. A wise man deals in property. A fool deals in commercial paper. The poor speak endlessly of riches, number 81, and they are impoverished thereby. But the rich speak endlessly of work, and they are increased thereby. Number 82. Gold is the currency of kings. Silver is the currency of gentlemen. Barter is the currency of peasants. And debt is the currency of slaves. 83. Never put your money in the bank. 84. Never buy anything that you cannot take possession of. Number 85. When you buy blue sky, you get what you pay for. 86. In the world of business, there are at least 3 business boys for every businessman. Now, those are 86 principles of business that I've gleaned over the years, and I've put them to good use. I'm one of the few people in America that's not complaining about OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission. I'm not complaining about the banks, the Jews, the communists, the socialists, or John Kerry, or George Bush. I don't do business with any of them. Remember this business principle: if you never do business with a thief, you'll never be stolen from. All right, we got to take a break right here. Stand by. We'll come back and analyze some of these business principles and We'll see where they take us right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Well, how many laws did Moses give us? And how many laws has our government given us? Well, Moses gave us 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. The state, at last count, has given us 2.5 million laws, and they're adding to it at the federal level at the rate of 47 pages a day. Now, the Apostle Peter said that we ought to obey God rather than men. You'll see that in Acts 5, verse 29. And Congress said that we ought to voluntarily apply the teachings of the Scripture in the lives of families, individuals, and societies. And they said that in Public Law 97-280. And our Supreme Court said that there is a higher loyalty than loyalty to this country, loyalty to God. And they said that in Seeger versus United States. Now, every authority is in agreement. The Congress, the Supreme Court, and God Almighty. They all agree that the Scriptures are the final authority on law. Now, if you'd like to learn these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, and how to use them against government intrusion into your God-given rights, it's a right, duty, and obligation that we owe to ourselves, our families, and to our society. And here at the law school, we teach all 759 of these statutes, judgments, and commandments, along with the penalties for their violation. And we do that twice a year, here in the spring and the fall. Now, why don't you make it a point to regain your First Amendment right to free exercise this year? The First Amendment is the gateway to the Second Amendment and, indeed, to your entire Bill of Rights. The law of God may be old, but it's not old-fashioned, and it's very relevant to our lives and to our rights today. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Remember, the Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. Those compact discs, by the way, play in one of those $20 players. You don't have to have a computer. If you're online, you can go to my website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for your free General Law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Hey, let me tell you a little story here about trading. Trading is business. Trading is the fundamental of business. It's the opposite to working for wages. A man was walking along one day and he spotted a pretty rock, which he then traded for a pocket knife, which he then traded for a book, which he in turn traded for a dog, which he then traded for a lamb, which he in turn traded for a calf, which he then traded for a saddle. He traded the saddle for a pony, which he traded for a horse, which he then traded for a car, which he traded for a pickup, which he then traded for a truck, which he then traded for an airplane, which he traded for a cottage. He traded the cottage for a lot, which he traded for an acre, which he traded for a house, which he then traded for a business, which he then turned around and traded for a mill, which he then traded for a farm, which in turn he traded for a ranch, which is where he found the pretty rock. Now, that's kind of a simplification, maybe an oversimplification of this concept of trading. Trading is business. Trading is property. Working for wages is the antithesis of business. It's the difference between being the owner and the boss and being the employee and the servant. Americans are told every election that what Americans want are jobs, jobs, jobs. That's what's being spouted by President Bush and by John Kerry. Bush says, follow me and I'll find more and more jobs, jobs, jobs. And Kerry says, well, we're not finding enough jobs. Elect me and I'll find more jobs. I avoid jobs like I avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD. There's no money in employment. Now, I've worked at many jobs. You know, if you're poor, you have to work at a job, don't you? And that's the subject matter of the of the story I'm telling you, these 86 business principles. Why do you want a job? Why don't you want property? Why don't you want wealth? Why don't you want success as opposed to mediocrity? A job. You know, when we talk about business principles, do you think that Ted Turner would work at McDonald's for $5 an hour? I think Ted Turner would say, well, you know, if I couldn't make more than $5 an hour, I would work at McDonald's. People who are unemployed are people who do not want to work. Oh, I know. I hear you out there belly aching right now. Well, yeah, I want to work. Sure you do. You want to work at the job you were just terminated from. I once met a man like that. He was a refrigeration mechanic down in Lake Wales, Florida. And he made $25 an hour. He was an independent contractor. He was out fixing refrigerators and things like that. He was a refrigeration man. And I asked him one day, I said, how's business? He says, really bad. And I said, why is that? And he says, I'm only working about 20 hours a week. And he said, no, not too long ago, I was working 50 or 60 hours a week. And I said, well, how much do you charge? And he said, $25 an hour. And I said, well, are there other refrigeration mechanics out there? And he says, yeah, there's a bunch of them. How much do they get paid? And he said, $25 an hour. And he says, the economy's poor, and because the economy is poor, people aren't having as many things fixed as they used to. And so they limp along and they don't get them fixed. And he said, what do you think I ought to do? I said, I think you ought to lower your price to $12.50 an hour and take a bigger market share. He looked at me and he said, I ain't working for no $12 an hour. I'm a refrigeration mechanic and I'm going to get $25. And you see, right there is the root problem with most Americans. I'm worth $25 an hour. Well, listen, boys and girls, I'm worth $200 an hour. And when I can't get $200 an hour, then I do something else for $100 an hour. And when I can't get $100 an hour, I do something for $50 an hour. And when I can't get something for $50 an hour, I work for $10 an hour or $5 an hour. And if I have to, I go out in my fields and I pick up rocks. I have never been unemployed, not for a minute. Not in my lifetime. I'm 65 years old, boys and girls, and I have never been unemployed. And if I live to be 110, I will never breathe a minute of unemployment. When a man says, I'm unemployed, he's saying all of the work has been done. And boys and girls, let me tell you, the work hasn't even begun to be done. Now, I've never been unemployed, and I've got a business principle here, and I said, a diligent man will never be unemployed. I'm going to tell you a little story here. When I was a kid, 15 years old, I wanted a job, so I went down to Frank Roach's, and I sent down there by Bud Clark's employment agency. Walter Bugnuda, on my way down Lighthouse Road, I stopped to ask how far it was to Roach's, and old Walter Bugnuda stopped me, and he said, after he interviewed me there, he said, well, you might as well turn around, kid, and go right on back to Eureka where you came from because you're never going to make it at Roach's. Never. He still farms with horses, I was informed. You get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, milk 140 cows. He said that's the biggest barn in the county. It's 70 cows to the side. 70 cows to the side. And he said he's got three hired men. He's still farming with horses down there. It's the hardest place in the valley to work. Well, I went on down there anyway, and I got a job. I stayed there 3 years, working at the hardest place in the valley to work. I went from the hardest place to the easiest place. That was Bill Trutelli's. Bill Trutelli, he didn't farm with horses. He had hydraulics, and he had electric motors on elevators, and he had a pipeline, and the milk all moved through the pipeline to the bulk tank, and it was pumped out of the bulk tank and into the bulk truck and so on. Frank Roach, all of his milk went into milk cans. All the milk cans had to be wheeled out to the coolers. They had to go be placed into the coolers and taken out of the coolers and up onto the milk stand and off the milk stand and onto the milk truck. I mean, everything was done by hand. I worked there for 3 years. Hardest place in the valley. Now, one of my first jobs was to clean the barn. It took about 2 hours to clean the barn, both sides. One day, I discovered that by increasing my productivity, how could I increase my productivity? Well, there was 5 loads of cow manure on each side. That's 10 loads of cow manure. It took an hour to clean each side. If I could get the cows out of the barn with less manure on the floor, I'd have less to clean up. If I had less to clean up, I could do it in less time. So when I had worked there for a couple of weeks and struggling along with the nastiest, dirtiest job on the farm, I learned a lesson. If you let the cows out from the head end, they all do it on the floor. But if you let them out from the door end and put the first 10 cows out, then the second 10 cows, only 2 of them do it on the floor, the third 10 cows, 4, and so on up the line, I could cut it in half. When I got the manure on the floor cut in half, I then struck. I went out there as soon as I finished breakfast and went to work, and I finished my part of the barn work in 1 hour. In fact, it was 50 minutes. Came over to the boss and said, "Okay, I'm done. What's next?" And he looked at me with disgust. And he yelled at me. He said, "Do the other side of the barn." I said, "I'm through, Mr. Rocha, with both sides." He was dumbfounded. He said, "That's impossible." He walked out of the, he used to wash the equipment. He walked out of the milk house. He walked over to one side. He looked over at the other side, and he looked. And the two guys who did the other half of the barn work, two of them, I had done my half of the barn work in less than 60 minutes. And they normally took an hour to do their barn work, and they weren't quite done yet. And he read them the riot act. Let me tell you. In the wintertime, he only kept one man. I was going to high school at the time, and he kept me and terminated the other two. Now, that's why I said to you, a diligent man will never be unemployed. I've worked that way all my life. I've never seen a minute of unemployment. Nobody lets me go. I'm the guy that you hang on to because I'm worth 2 or 3 other men. And that's why I'm always employed. It's the guys that are unproductive that are unemployed. The guys that they let go first. Of course, unless you belong to a labor union. I've told you that story. There's no money to be made with labor unions. Labor unions are there for the express purpose of inefficiency. They do everything they can to do it as slow as possible. That's why your jobs are being exported somewhere else. Because, you know, union people work slow. And then they work slower, and then if it's possible to work even slower, they'll do that. And they want more and more money for producing less and less. And if there are any gains made in productivity, I don't think you're going to find it from the union. You'll find it from automation. You'll find it from some other company, some other country, but you're not going to find it from the union. That was my experience. And now you find that less and less unions are representing fewer and fewer people, aren't they? Fewer and fewer unions representing fewer and fewer people, while your jobs are being exported across the seas to countries where people will work harder, who will perform, produce. In other words, their productivity is higher. So if you want to make money, you have to increase your productivity. You got to be better than the guy next to you. That's what business is all about. Business is always looking for a faster, cheaper, better way to do that job. And that in itself makes for business. It used to be that a man worked for wages, and then when he got old, he was replaced. Today, they replace him with a machine. That's automation. Hang on, I'll be back with a closer when we come back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? It's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, public institutions, and our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they teach the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our schools, public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. You know, this is a radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? And are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? Now, the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. They didn't know, nor did they understand, the separation of church and state when our Constitution was written back in 1787. And there's still one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law and the Ten Commandments, all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the benefits, 33 articulable benefits for their observance. Every law has a penalty. You don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer its effect. Now, whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, Karma, or something else, it's automatic, and it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package first? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You're not out anything. Why don't you call right now? The number's 417-273-4967. And if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for your free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Hey, let me digress here for a second. You know, Isaiah had something to say about land and business. He talked about every man under his own vine or fig tree. Our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention saw every man on his own land. I come from Northern California, where the redwood forest up there is owned by a few, that is 4 or 5, maybe 6, large timber companies and the state of California. They own it all. Do you think it makes more sense and is better for us, the people of America, to have 6 corporations own all of the redwood timber, along with the state of California, in the redwood region? Or do you think that it made more sense when that country was opened up to have thousands, tens of thousands of people all own small acreages? Yeah, I agree. It's not as efficient. But would it be better to have 1 million people own an acre or to have 6 companies or 5 companies own 200,000 acres each? Keeping in mind that an acre of redwood forest, if it's old growth, would be worth, you know, maybe $1 million. Maybe 500,000. Well, our founding fathers thought that monopoly was bad. It was bad for the society, bad for the nation, and bad for the economy. Today, we've done just exactly the opposite. Now we practice monopoly under the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Under the 9th plank to the manifesto, we lock all of the people up in the cities and make them dependent upon government and business. Government and business have a symbiotic relationship to exploit the labor of the people who live in the cities. You know, God gave us land. He didn't give us a lot in the city or a house in the suburbs. He gave you land. Land is where all of the wealth is stored. All wealth comes out of the ground. How much ground do you own? Wealth used to be measured in acres of land, head of cattle or sheep. and ounces of gold or silver. Today, people measure their wealth in a mortgage on a house in the suburbs with a business that has borrowed money or has an inventory that's owned by Westinghouse Finance. We now measure wealth by financial statements, stocks and bonds, commercial paper that inflates at the rate of 7% a year. So you have this hidden tax of 7%, we call that the economy. And we deal in unjust weights and balances, Federal Reserve notes and mortgages and stocks and bonds, instead of dealing in just weights and balances like cows, sheep, acres, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. As a result of that, we Americans are now in poverty. And I'm not talking about some poor black living down on the Mississippi Delta. I'm talking about prominent businessmen driving Cadillac automobiles and Porsches. And those people are poor. They're in debt. Anybody that's in debt is poor. I'm not in debt. In fact, back in 1991, Ford Motor Company posted, I think that year, 1991, they posted a $2 billion loss for the year. Think of that, $2 billion loss. I posted a few thousand dollar gain that year. I had a better year than Ford had. Now, I'll agree that most years Ford does better than I do. But I'll tell you this, there's only four stocks on the Dow Jones Industrial Average that make money. General Electric, General Motors, Walmart, and Microsoft. And the rest of them on the blue chip industrials. I mean, these companies are so poor, I wouldn't take them if you gave them to me, because there's no hope that they'll ever unsaddle themselves from the debt that they have incurred. So what we've been watching with Enron, WorldCom, Global Crossing, those companies that have gone bankrupt are simply the precursors of the companies that are going to go bankrupt, like Ford and General Motors and IBM. All these big companies have massive debts. They can't withstand another Great Depression. Now think about that. Poverty. Where does it come from? Well, let me tell you. In 1950, when I was a kid, it was the last year. That's the year we repealed the blue laws that governed the Sabbath. But in America, we practice the Sabbath here. And there's an important law, an important statute that you see here in Isaiah 58, verse 13. If you people cannot or will not keep the Sabbath, which is the test commandment, you don't need to worry about money. You will always be in poverty. I know, Ted Turner is the biggest landowner in America, has $2 billion left out of his $10 billion, and he doesn't keep the Sabbath. And people, I had a guy in here last week, he said, what about all these wealthy, successful people? Well, they're wealthy and successful until they go upside down. I watched 60 Minutes last night, and there was a guy that's being prosecuted down there for stock fraud. And he made millions, $250 million, off of all kinds of people out there that invested their money with just anybody and lost it, which is a business principle that you ought to follow. You invest your money in yourself. If you can't manage your own money, you can rest assured that the guy that manages it for you will help himself first. Listen to Isaiah 58:13. He says, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and you call the Sabbath a delight and holy of the eternal, honorable, and if you will honor him, that's God, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then you shall delight yourself in the eternal, and I will cause you to ride upon the high places of the earth. I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of the Eternal has spoken it. Now, if you practice the Sabbath, you're going to make money. Now, there's a lot of people out there that are Sabbath keepers. I don't deny that. But they're not really as successful as they could be, because there's more than one law that governs this thing of success in business. And I know a lot of people that practice some of the laws and they have some business success. I know of a few people that practice all of the laws and they are phenomenally successful. They're not as rich and not as powerful as Donald Trump or Ted Turner. But you know, I sit here at the twilight of my life. I'm 65. Remember, I've only been guaranteed 70 years, so I'm not going to die for five more years as long as I practice the law. But once I get to be 70, which is only 5 years away, no more guarantees. I can die at any time from that point on. Now, Solomon made an observation in Ecclesiastes and Proverbs. He said, you know, you can only eat one steak at a time. I mean, there's only so much wealth that you can poke at yourself. And I've got cows out here. My freezers are full of meat. I've got four out here that could be butchered in the morning. I haven't got any room to put them. Which is exactly what God told me. He said, I will pour you out a blessing that there shall not be room enough for you to receive it. Let's take a look at Malachi 3 verse 8. Tithing is an important element in financial success. People don't practice the Sabbath, number one. And they won't tithe. They'll pay their income tax to their God, the USA Incorporated, and take a job at the casino paying a minimum wage. And then cry in their beer about, gosh, I'm just barely getting by. What I need is for the casino to double my salary to $10 an hour. Well, Frank Roach had told me one time, he said, it doesn't make any difference how much money you make. You'll spend it all. The guy that makes $50,000 a year spends it all. The guy that makes $25,000 a year spends it all. The guy that makes $12,500 a year, he spends it all. Nobody saves a dime. Nobody's got, as the old proverb says, a pot to piss in, a place to put it, or a window to throw it out of. Take a look at Malachi 3:8. Will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me. But you say, wherein have we robbed you, God? And he answers, in tithes and offerings. You are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Then he goes on in verse 10, he says, you bring you all the tithes into my storehouse, that there shall be meat in my house. And prove me now herewith, says the Eternal of Hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. Well, fortunately for me, I woke up some years back and I said, gee, let me in on this deal. Let me see if I can't get God to open the windows of heaven and pour me out a blessing. Well, my freezers are full, my cupboard is full, and my pastures are full. Then it keeps raining and the grass keeps growing. So you can see, boys and girls, George Gordon's not complaining. But I'm practicing the law of Moses, and I think it's a pretty good law, and I think it's something for you to look into. I think it's going to pay you better, and you're going to be a whole lot happier than jobs, jobs, jobs. And the other side of the coin is, if you don't practice this law, and you won't practice the economic laws, then you can expect poverty. After all, it's just the natural results of violating the law of God. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a non-profit, non-commercial, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Hey, there's a signal. It says my time's up. I gotta leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.